Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Culbranson.
Welcome back. Silver and Black Today here on this Monday. Hope you're doing well out there in Raider Nation. Scott Culbranson, Q Myers back with you. We're talking football. Of course, always brought to you by our good friends, Sam and Ash, the injury attorneys. Give them a call anytime, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. Later in the show, Sam and Ash will be with me. They're going to talk about the Super Bowl commercials. Were they good? Were they bad? Q, what did you think, man? Did you have any commercials that you actually liked?
I thought that they were pretty cool. Yeah. I'm usually not a guy that gets into the commercials too much. Normally, I'm not even really paying attention to the commercials because I'm at a different setting. But being at home watching the Super Bowl for the first time in, you know, 4 or 5 years, it was just different. And watching the commercials was pretty cool. But I think the one that stood out to me the most was the Tracy Morgan commercial where he was like, I think so, or probably, or something like that. I don't even remember what the commercial was about, but I just thought it was really funny the way Tracy Morgan did it. Navigated through it, and it was a funny commercial. And so there was like two or three different versions of it. So I thought that was probably the best one.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Super Bowl to me, and I know this is a strange year, so it's sort of an outlier. It's hard to compare things because of what we've been through with the pandemic. And of course, the NFL got their season. I remember all those guys back in August. And believe me, I had my doubts too, but I tend to be a glass half full guy. And I remember all those, there was national writers who I respect immensely talking about how irresponsible it was for the NFL to go ahead with the season, that they should cancel the season and all this kind of stuff. But the NFL concludes the season with the Super Bowl and all the healthcare workers obviously in the stadium to celebrate that. But Q, the thing I'm starting to notice about the Super Bowl, and it's because, you know, we cover the sport and so we're always into the NFL. It's a year-round thing for us. So the Super Bowl is always going to be a big game. I think culturally though, it's still massive. But if you look at things like the commercials, to me, people are such inundated with information on a daily basis and sports on a daily basis. I don't know. I think the Super Bowl's impact is lessening in some ways. As big as the NFL is, and it's still the biggest sport there is, it's still the biggest event on TV every year worldwide. But I just feel like culturally, because we're talking about the commercials, culturally, some of that stuff, and even the musical guests and all that, whether you like them or don't like them, it just seems to be like a little more muted, that maybe because people are able to get information, get the sports stuff on a daily basis, that it's just losing a little bit of that.
I mean, yeah, I can see that. I can see that a little bit.
If you disagree, tell me. That's okay.
No, I mean, I don't know. It's one of those. It's where I don't really know. You know what I mean? It's just like I said, I haven't really paid attention in the past few years because I've been in a different setting for the Super Bowl. Right. Whereas this year I was at home and I was a little bit more locked in and just kind of almost watching the game like a normal Sunday Raider game I was watching. You know, just kind of chill by myself. I had a couple people around me, but not really. Just kind of, you know, being locked in. So it was just different. It was a different setting, different you know, a different day for me. So I don't think I have a really good take on it, to be honest.
That's right.
So
that's okay.
I mean, that's just kind of is what it is, you know.
Well, and to me that's just the way I felt about it. And again, my feeling around that might just be because this year was so different, right? There was, like you said, if this was a normal year, I'm sure you and I would have been there at Radio Row. We would have been down there. We would have been talking to all kinds of people coming down Radio Row and all that stuff. So maybe I would have felt differently about it. But it's interesting. Now, the quarterback carousel in the NFL that some people think is going to happen, others say it's not going to happen. Of course, we saw the Stafford and Goff trade. Now, Q, Carson Wentz appears to be on his way out of Philadelphia. The leader, it seems from reports, is Chicago, but also there's Indianapolis looking for a quarterback after Phillip Rivers retires. It's interesting, the Raiders conversation around Deshaun Watson. Again, I've always looked at that as a complete long shot Hail Mary. I don't think it will happen. I think Derek Carr will be quarterback next year in Las Vegas. But when you look at what's happening with Carson Wentz, it goes to show you that, again, quarterbacks and the fact that I said this last week, Hugh, on one of our shows, that the quarterback being part of your organization, with the exception of two or three guys in the league right now, maybe four, it's not the same anymore. Quarterbacks are much more about a commodity. You want to go with whatever's hot. You want to switch it up. So organizations aren't committing to guys for 5-6 years. They're saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to give you a couple seasons. If you don't pan out, then we're going to go find the next guy.
Yeah, no, it's funny that the quarterback all of a sudden has become like a very tradable part, you know, where at one point it just that was like, are you serious? You're not trading your quarterback. And, you know, I even went into this year thinking like there's no way these guys are getting traded. And I just don't see it. Now, of course, we knew about Matt Stafford. We already had known all the information on that. But I mean, Jared Goff, I mean, I kind of was like, maybe there's a chance he gets traded. And then, boom, all of a sudden he's gone, you know. And now it looks like Carson Wentz is going to be gone. And there could be others. You know, there could be multiple guys that are on the move this offseason. I feel like these teams are just in this kind of mode where, hey, man, I don't have time to stick around or I don't have time, or this guy didn't have time to stick around and just, you know, be my good friend and we're going to, you know, try to win some games together. Like, I need to get over the top. I need to find a way to take good and make it great. And so they're doing what they have to do for themselves. And then as we all know as well, especially with Deshaun Watson, the players have a lot bigger voice now. So if they're not happy in their area and where they're at and their team around them, they have a voice in, hey, let's go make some moves. So there's a lot that goes into it. Tom Brady leaving New England and going to Tampa Bay. I know he was a free agent, but that also shows that, hey, you can have a guy come in your first year and still go and win the whole thing. If you have a good system and a good quarterback, good leadership, good everything, you can go win it the very next year. So, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons why. But, yeah, quarterbacks seem like it's going to be one of those those positions that are kind of moving around more than we've ever seen them move before.
Well, and I think like the situation with Philly, Q, I like Jalen Hurts. Don't get me wrong. Okay. But I'm just blown away that they're ready to push the button. And I know Wentz had a bad year. There's no questioning that he had a bad year in every way. And he owned a lot of that. He's even admitted it, saying, look, you know, he had all kinds of issues. It was dysfunctional with the coach there. They blow out the coach. They got a new young coach in Philly. But to turn it over to Jalen Hurts, are you then saying, look, we're moving on. We're in a rebuild and we got a young quarterback and we're just going to go with that since we drafted him already and he's on a rookie deal. Although Philly will still take the massive salary cap hit if they trade Wentz.
Yeah, no, they are. They're taking a major hit, on the dead money on the salary cap. But I was a little surprised that they're ready to turn it over to Jalen already. And again, I like him. I like him a lot, but I just don't know. You know, if you make that move and he's your starting quarterback, I mean, you're sinking or swimming with this dude. Mm-hmm. So if all of a sudden he drowns, then what does that mean for you and the rest of your team? You know what I mean? So I think that they're taking a major chance. I honestly didn't think that both of those guys were going to be back this year, but I thought that they would just say, hey, you know what? We'll just trade Jalen Hurts and we'll get as much for him as possible, and then we'll move on with Carson Wentz because, one, the money, two, he's been there, done that, you know, and then three, that at least at this point, he's a better proven quarterback than Jalen Hurts is. But, hey, obviously it shows what I know.
Well, and again, Q Myers is with me here on Silver and Black today on this Monday. And it's interesting, too. Friday report came out also that Marcus Mariota might be a target for the Patriots, which Q, I'll tell you what, the initial report was something like a third round draft pick. If the Raiders could finagle a third round draft pick for Marcus Mariota, unload his $10 million, and get that draft capital back, that would be a huge win. And with the way quarterbacks are going, with quarterbacks being in demand and teams wanting to switch it up, it might have been a smart move by Mike Mayock to sign him last year.
Yeah, it really could be. And I saw that report and I thought, hey, a third round draft pick, that's not bad at all. I mean, that's really good if you can get that, especially from a guy who didn't do too much for the Raiders in 2020. I mean, he literally played in one game and that was out of necessity. But he did well. So, I mean, he gave the Raiders a chance to win that game against the Chargers. Obviously, they didn't. But still, if they can flip him for a third round pick, that's great. You know, that really is, which kind of goes back to my point that I've been making the whole time about the Raiders need to draft a quarterback anyway, try to develop him. Worst come to worst, you could flip him. Obviously, as this is showing, obviously teams need quarterbacks and they're willing to give a high price for him. So if you can get a guy, even if you get him in the second and third round and he looks promising, looks like he could be the part, there may be a team come calling and say, hey, we'll give you a number two for him. Or we'll give you, you know, or whatever. I mean, it's just smart business, I think, to always have that backup, you know, to have a quality backup that you think that you believe in and that other teams will keep their eye out on. I just think that that's a quality thing, because I'll tell you right now, ain't nobody looking at Nate Peterman like, oh, my God, I think we should go get him. Nobody. Nobody.
Yes.
They don't care how much millions John Gruden pours into him. Ain't nobody come calling the Raiders for Nate Peterman.
No, sir. That's true. But you're right. You look at what New England did with backup quarterbacks for years, drafting young quarterbacks, getting people to think that they were great, whether it was Garoppolo and Matt Castle and all these guys who went on to get big deals and trades that helped the Patriots. So those are the types of things that you need to do. And I think if you're the Raiders now, and if you're an NFL fan, by the way, don't get too attached attached to your quarterback. I don't care who it is, because they could end up having three great seasons, and the next thing you know, they're sent packing because the team's ready to move on. They got somebody else behind them. So it's really interesting time. All right, it's that time of the day we ask you to clean out your ears, and the man to do it is right here with us. It's time for the Q-tip.
I can't hear you, Peach.
It's time to listen up, Raider Nation.
Can't hear you, Peach.
Clear out those ears and get ready for the Q-tip. Your boy Q's daily take on what you need to hear.
That very precision seems to drive Q-tip fans right over the edge.
Like it or not.
Well, today's Q-tip just goes back to what we saw on Sunday and saw the greatness that was what Tampa Bay was able to do to Kansas City. And, you know, you got to give the Raiders a lot of credit for giving the Chiefs that first L of the season, and really the only L that mattered because they were playing with their full team, but kind of not gave the blueprint on how to beat them, but showed them a way to be beaten. And then Tampa Bay just took it to a whole nother level. But something that we mentioned earlier in the show is, you know, having a guy that makes everyone around them better and having a guy that can walk into the locker room and command that you be better. You know, hey, get on this level. You need to be doing this. Certain things I noticed from that game on Sunday. And there was a time when Gronk was going in motion and Tom said, no, stop. No, stop. I mean, you could hear him yell, no, mm-hmm. stop. And then he said, okay, now you go. Like, he's directing traffic. That's the kind of command that you've got to be able to have. And I know everyone can't be that guy. Everyone, there's a reason why Tom Brady's been in the league as long as he is. There's a reason why everyone says he's the GOAT because of what he's been able to accomplish. But you've got to have those natural-born leaders. That's what I'm basically talking about, man, is natural-born leaders. And that's something that we brought up quite a bit. You know, obviously the Nelson Aguilar thing, you know, it hit the fan, it hit the internet, it hit Twitter, and people lost their minds, but the point is still valid. The point is valid regardless of how big of a blow up it was in the locker room, how big of a, you know, how upset he might have been with the organization. The point is still the team needs leaders, and they need real deal guys that can go in there and command that you are better and make you expect more out of yourself. Every single one of those dudes in that Tampa Bay locker room expect more from themselves because they have number 12 there. And I'm not saying that the Raiders need to go replace Derek Carr. That's not what I'm getting at. I'm just saying what they need to do is they need to get some guys in the locker room that can command the locker room and say, hey, this is how we do it around here. Let's get this right, and let's go win some damn games, and let's get to the playoffs and see what happens. What Tampa Bay showed you with weapons, it doesn't matter if you're a first-year guy, second-year guy, third-year guy, you can go to the Super Bowl and win it. The Raiders have weapons. Can they go and just put it all together? All they got to do is put it all together. Gus Bradley, got to get that defense straight. That's his job. John Gruden, you've got to be able to, you know, work your magic on the offensive side of things and set everybody up for the you know, to be successful. But most importantly, these guys have got to police themselves. They've got to be able to lead. They've got to have that leader in the locker room. I'm not questioning who Derek Carr is. I'm just saying I don't know if he's the guy that's going to elevate everybody. So if he's not going to be the guy that's going to walk in the locker room and make everyone better, somebody better be in that locker room that's going to make them all better. And that's who the Raiders need to identify. I don't know who that guy is.
Yeah, well said. And I think that's what they need to find. You're absolutely right. And wherever it comes from, it comes from. But I do think this is where if it's not going to be Derek Carr, which is totally fine, like you said, then you got to go get that guy. But if you don't get that guy somewhere, then I just don't see how this team elevates. And that's, again, that's not a knock against Derek Carr. Everybody's got their own talents and abilities and leadership styles. But I also think, and it'll be something we'll talk about all offseason, at least until they do something or don't do something, which is I think right now, Q, this is the moment. Everybody thought last year was the year where, well, the Raiders have to make a decision on Derek Carr. I think it's now. I think it's, is this the guy that is going to take you to the promised land? If you're all in on him, nothing wrong with that. I can support that. That's fine. So then you give him an extension and you make him the guy. If you don't do that, then to me, that says to me openly that you're not sure. And if you're not sure, if I'm Derek Carr, I'm pressing right now. I mean, I got my agent all over Mike Mayock and John Gruden right now for my extension because I want to know where I stand. And if I was Derek Carr, honestly, Q, if I'm Derek Carr and knowing that he's not that guy that you're talking about necessarily, his leadership style wise, if I'm Derek Carr, I'm then saying, listen, all right, if you guys don't want to extend me, then why don't you find out if people are interested in me? And I might even think about it. Now, I know he wants to remain a Raider for the rest of his career. He's always said that. But right. he's at this moment in time coming off his best season, right? And right now is his best positioning point from a negotiation standpoint. So if he doesn't negotiate with the Raiders and the Raiders aren't willing to do something, to me, that'll say a lot. But I do think that this team has so many issues it's got to deal with and grapple with. We'll see where that lands up on the pecking order, because there's so much to do, like you said, with the defense, so much to do to find extra and more leadership to put on this team to go along with the leadership they already have, especially from a style perspective. So it'll be interesting. Q, before I let you go, as I know you got to run, is obviously finally the wrong was righted. Tom Flores elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame Saturday. We knew it was going to happen. We've been telling people for a while that it was going to happen, that it was a done deal. But him, Charles Woodson, obviously so well-deserving going in as well. Talk about what that means for Raider Nation. I mean, these two guys are going to go in together, which is phenomenal. And if there's travel allowed, if people are allowed to go to the ceremony, this is a trip I think every Raider fan that can go should go.
Absolutely. It's going to be a great day in Canton, and I encourage everyone to go out there that can. You know, anyone from Raider Nation, if you want to see football greatness, and I'm not just talking about Woodson and Flores being inducted, but just the whole building. If you've never been there, just go there and explore around it and see all the gold jackets all come together all weekend long. Like, you just see them out and about. You know, I mean, it's just such a – it's a mecca of football, and it's amazing, and I never would have thought it until I actually went there and experienced it myself, and it's something that is incredible. I'm going to try to make my way there this year, and not guaranteed it's going to happen, but I'm going to try to hustle my way to get there. And I encourage all the Raider Nation, because, man, again, it's a great day in Canton. It's great for the Raiders. It's great for Flores to get in, you know, and not like the snake got in, not like others get in, you know, across the league where it's after they've already passed away. And I mean, this has been a long time coming for Tom Flores. So it's finally great to see him get the recognition that he deserves. And it's funny, I've been hearing people on like NFL Network and ESPN talking about, yeah, well, I don't think people realize that, you know, Tom Flores was actually the first Latino coach to ever, you know, win a World Series, or not World Series, win a Super Bowl. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? And it's because they always give props to Tony Dungy. Oh, he's the first man of color. And I'm like, no, that's not true. And I actually heard people on NFL Network saying that today. Like, a lot of people don't realize that the first man of color to win a Super Bowl wasn't Tony Dungy. It was Tom Flores. I'm thinking, duh, you just now getting that? Where have you guys been all these years? But okay, so I guess better late than never. So yeah, shout out to Coach Flores, and of course, congratulations to C. Wood as well. Both very well, very big honor that they both deserved.
Absolutely. Do me a favor too. Make sure you go subscribe to Q's Daily Raiders podcast. That's the Locked On Raiders podcast, as well as the Locked On Bets podcast, which he does with the awesome Lee Sterling from Paramount Sports. You can subscribe to both of those wherever you get your podcast. And of course, we have Q here on the show when he can be with us. Q, as always, my man, thanks for being with us. Enjoy the rest of your week.
I will, man. Appreciate you. Congratulations to Coach Flores and C. Wood and Raider Nation. Keep on doing what you do. That's how we roll.
All right. We're going to step aside. When we come back, we will roll on here on Silver and Black Today, only on Raider Nation Radio.
The autumn wind is a raider, and when it blows, it comes from the Las Vegas desert. Back to Silver and Black Today, here on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM.
Thanks to Q Myers for joining me for those two segments. Q's back to doing his show in Texas, and I am with you here on Silver and Black Today, powered by our good friends Sam and Ash, the injury attorneys, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. You can also get on the phone. Tell me what you think of the Super Bowl. We talked a lot about the Super Bowl and how it went down. 702-365-9200 is the number. Some of you were rooting for the Chiefs, surprisingly, because you didn't want Tom Brady to win again. That didn't work out so well. And I want to hear somebody. There can't seriously be anybody out there who's going to argue that Tom Brady's not the greatest quarterback in the history of pro football, right? You can't. I don't know what your argument could be. He played in this division. Still got to win the game. Still got to go to the Super Bowl. Have to win it. And to win 7 out of 10. It's incredible. By the way, Patrick Mahomes was under pressure 29 times yesterday. That's the most in Super Bowl history. And I also saw today on Twitter, and it was crazy. I retweeted it because Josh DeBo over at AP had tweeted out one of his stats because he's a big stat dude. And one of the things he tweeted was just remarkable to me. Here's what it is. 261 players have appeared in the Super Bowl as Tom Brady's teammate after last night's game. Of the 728 players to play in a Super Bowl win since 2001, 207 did it as Brady's teammate. So almost 30% of players who've won a Super Bowl since 2001 did so as Brady's teammate. Remarkable. I mean, it's just crazy, the stats. And you know, as much as I argue that Michael Jordan is the greatest professional athlete of all time, at least in our modern era, and I know now Brady has more championships than Jordan. Jordan was just so dominant in so many ways. It's a different sport, I understand. It's hard to compare the two. But I will tell you this, that the Tom Brady's impact on professional football, you can't argue. I mean, I'm not saying you got to like the guy. I'm not saying that. Not saying that. What I am saying, though, is that he is by far the best ever. Chris Chapman, my producer, are you there, buddy? Because I got to ask you what your opinion is on this, because I know you're a Jets fan, so of course you hate Tom Brady.
Absolutely.
But there's no way to argue that he's not the best ever, right?
No, it's impossible to argue. And, I mean, look, you could point to a lot of factors, right? Like, sure. New England early on, the defense was winning championships, right? That first one was all on the mm-hmm. defense. But the reality is a lot of people want to point that out. But what they don't remember is Tom Brady leading the Patriots down the field to kick that winning field goal against the Rams in the final few minutes of that game.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
The defense played great. But who had the ball at the end of the game and who led his team down the field to beat the greatest show on turf, right? I mean, that's the first one. The one against the Eagles, what did they put up, 34, 35 points in that game?
Right.
The one against the Panthers, yeah, John Casey kicks the ball out of bounds. Who leads the team down the field for Vinatieri to kick that winning field goal? Tom Brady. It's mind-boggling, and look, as much as I don't want to be the... I mean, he tortured me for 20 years. And Raider fans have it bad, but you don't have it as bad as the Jets when it came to Tom Brady, right? Because we had Bill Belichick for a day.
Yeah.
A day. He was the head coach of the New York Jets, and then he resigned on a napkin. But there's no reason to think that Bill Belichick might not have passed on Chad Pennington in that draft and waited and drafted Tom Brady in the sixth round.
Oh, that's a terrible thought. I mean, for you, because it's just torture.
It is. And I block it from my mind because now he's gone.
Yeah.
And I now live with the idea that, hey, you know what? Bill Belichick has a losing record without Tom Brady. So maybe, just maybe, it was all Brady and not Belichick. But, I mean, to deny, look, the guy has more Super Bowl championships than every team in the NFL.
Yeah.
Right? Like the Steelers have six. The Patriots have six. Tom Brady has seven. He's got seven Super Bowl rings. And it's not like he's Robert Horry where he's just a guy on the team who maybe hits the occasional big shot.
Right.
He is the guy who plays the most important position in team sports.
Yeah, and not only that, Chris, but and I a lot of the arguments I get against Tom Brady are things like, well, he played in the worst division all those years, so they got the first round bye. Now, I'm not saying that didn't help. But the fact of the matter is, when you get into the playoffs, okay, even if you get that better seed, you still have to win. You still have to go into the biggest game on earth, and you have to perform. Now, he lost three of them, right, including the one I saw against the Giants. So he lost three of them, but the fact is he won seven. I mean, again, a 70% win percentage in the Super Bowl.
Well, it's hysterical because if you don't, I made the decision even after they lost the second time to the Giants. I'm like, if you don't accept reality, you're just lying to yourself. You're lying to yourself. I mean, Joe Montana, yeah, you know what? Joe Montana won a bunch of Super Bowls with the 49ers, but Joe Montana had guys like Jerry Rice, John Taylor, Roger Craig, who might be the most underrated running back in the history of the NFL because he was overlooked by all those great players on the 49ers. Their defense was loaded year in, year out.
Yep.
There was no free agency when Joe Montana was playing. Bill Walsh and George Seifert, they kept everybody every single year. And when they lost someone, guess what? They replaced them because they could. It was a dynasty. Tom Brady has done it with a bunch of guys. He had Randy Moss for one season or two seasons, right? He blew out his knee in the second season, so he never really had that second season with Randy Moss. But you look at the guys he was throwing to, Wes Welker, Chris Hogan. These are nobodies. Deion Branch. Deion Branch was the MVP of the Super Bowl, but Tom Brady is the guy throwing the ball to Deion Branch. He's thrown to nobodies his entire career until this season when he finally had two good receivers.
I know. And I agree with you, man. I mean, that's the thing. Again, you don't have to like Tom Brady, and I know how much it sticks in your craw being a Jets fan.
Oh, it will pain me to the day that I die that I had to live through this era, not only of Tom Brady, but of the Patriots and all the other championships that Boston won.
Yeah.
I mean, it's disgusting. I want to throw up, but it's like 10, 15, 20 years from now, we will look back as realizing we've lived through the greatest era in the history of the NFL. Because I didn't like Michael Jordan when he played, but I can look back now and say, I respect the hell out of what Michael Jordan did for the NBA.
I hated the Bulls.
I grew up rooting for an Eastern Conference team. I mean, I knew going into the season, September rolls around, oh, why am I going to watch? We're playing for second in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, let's go on the phone lines and see what people have to say. Gangster Raider, you're up first, man. You're on with Scott here on Silver and Black today.
Hey, what's happening, y'all?
What's up, buddy?
I like that, the game yesterday.
Man, I'll tell you what, it surprised me. I thought the Chiefs would win, but you know what? I also said, the only caveat I said yesterday, Gangster Raider, was that with Tom Brady, you just can't, you never know. You can't bet against the guy. And sure enough, man, they came up, that defense came up big.
No, I knew they was going to win because of the Tampa Bay defense and Kansas City injuries on the line. But I was hating, you know, because I didn't want Brady to get his seventh and Tampa Bay to win their Super Bowl at home, being the first team to play. I wanted us to be able to have that distinction. And also, I didn't want AB to get a ring. But in my heart of hearts, in my real analyst mind, I knew they were going to win, but I was low-key hating. But I also go to show the importance of the defensive line. That's why I'm so adamant on not keeping Fraud Marinelli. I think you should let Gus Bradley bring in his own defensive line coordinator or go back and get Coach Buckner, because the defensive line regressed under Rob Marinelli. And you see, if you put pressure on Mahomes, he's null and void with pressure. So therefore, that's why we need to put extra value on getting the right coach for the defensive line, because it regressed under Marinelli, you know what I'm saying? And I also feel that if we need to go all defense, you know what I'm saying? We, in the draft and in free agency, we need to go all defense, you know what I mean? And that shows it. I think everything that happened yesterday in the Super Bowl backs up all that I was saying. Am I right?
Yeah, you're right. The only caveat I'd say is that I also think you need depth on the offensive line. So in the draft, I would also look for offensive line.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, because offensive line do need draft. But I got a question for Q. Does he think that Cleveland Farrell had a better season this year than he had in his rookie season, like Vinny Bonsignor is trying to claim? Or do you agree that I think he regressed under Rob Marinelli because he played less games? He had less – just look at his stats from this year compared to last year. What do you think, Q?
Well, Q's gone, man. He had to go back and do a show in Texas. Next time we get him on, buddy, we'll make sure we ask him. All right.
All right. What do you think? What do you think about it? Do you think he had a better year than last year, his rookie year?
I do in spurts. Like, I don't think consistently you could say that, but I think overall you saw flashes, and you know, he was out as well. So it's a tough one because I like Furl. I think that he has shown that he can do certain things. But I'll tell you what, this next year is make or break. He's got to make a big, big step, or they got to move on. I mean, I don't care how highly drafted he was.
You got to give him a good coach.
I agree.
You know what I'm saying? And that Carl Marinelli was to his detriment. The whole line's detriment.
Yeah, I've heard that, man. A lot of people feel the same way. All right, Gangster Raider, thanks, man. We'll talk to you next time. Cool. We're going out to Joe in Houston. Joe, you're on with Scott here on Silver and Black Today.
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing today?
Good, Joe.
All I can say is about this Tom Brady, greatest quarterback of all time. Now, I'm going to say this, and I know people are going to say one thing. Everybody still take the time to quickly forget all this Spygate nonsense the first 3 years, first three Super Bowls. And let me touch on the story that I spoke with Marshall Faulk personally at the 2014 Hall of Fame when Aeneas, my college friend, went in to the Hall of Fame. He clearly stated to me that during that season, they already proved it that those guys that cheated. You know, my man on the show right now, being a Jets fan, when they had Mangini as their coach or whatever it was, it came out that they really cheated. You got to still take into account those three Super Bowls that happened. I don't care what nobody says in reference to the nonsense of, well, he still had to play the game, this, that, and the third. If I know what you're doing, half the battle was won. And when I spoke to Marshall Faulk during that time when we was at the Hall of Fame, he said during that season, Mike Martz had three playbooks. He had a regular season playbook, he had a playoff playbook, and he had a Super Bowl playbook. He had 80 plays set up, designed, that Rams had not run all year. When they line up and they do this and you shift and this, that, and the third, so when a defense actually was shifting to it, he automatically knew the cap was out of the bag, that they had seen somehow that playbook had gotten out. I'm going to leave that alone. Because I don't care. I don't care either way. I'm glad the Chiefs lost. I don't know any Raider fan that should have been going for the Chiefs. Going for the Chiefs. I don't get that at all. So that right there, Tom Brady's not in our division. He's never been in our division. I don't care about him getting 15 Super Bowls if the Chiefs, Chargers, or Denver is on the other end of that game. As far as what Gangster Raider said with Marinelli, I agree with him to an extent. I think Farrell had a better season this year because he wasn't playing slow. He was actually reacting. I mean, he was actually just going and opposed to whatever. But I think, honestly, there's no player on our defense, whoever we've drafted in the last 3 years, that we can honestly say we have a clear assessment of who they are because how dysfunctional the quote-unquote defense that Paul Gunther was trying to run. And that's just my thoughts on it. I said we can't get a true assessment of whoever we have on defense because the system was just so flawed. You have guys like, for instance, Littleton comes from the Rams, PFF top linebacker. All of a sudden, he don't know how to play football anymore. That's not possible. It has to be the system. It ain't the player. It's the system. I'll hang up and listen to your guys off there. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, Joe, I agree with you, man. I think you're right. I think that's why some of these guys like Furl and some of these other guys, I mean, you talk about Littleton. I expect him to bounce back. And then you got some of the other young guys like Mo Hurst that have shown that they can play at times, and then they fall off. Mm-hmm. Well, now you're going to have a coaching staff that's in there early, a guy who's going to have to take over with a new system that's much easier to manage and much easier to learn and run. And so we should know. I mean, we shouldn't get out of 2021 with any questions about any of those guys.
Can I say one more thing?
Of course.
The best thing about that is what John has said in that interview with JT the Brick. Mm-hmm. Gus Bradley was able to bring in his own linebackers coach, his own secondary coach, his own assistant secondary coach and quality control dude. And that speaks volumes of what they're trying to build. In terms of playing on the D-line, and this for Gangster Raider, if he's still listening, look, it's not going to be hard to mesh anything or techniques that Marinelli is trying to teach with Gus Bradley's system because everybody on the D-line has the three technique, has a position, has a quote-unquote job to do. The nose tackle has a job to do, and the ends have a job to do. And that's not hard. That's not hard to teach. And I'm sure we're gonna have assistant D linemen out there, coaches out there, and Gus Bradley taught defense as well. It's not gonna be an issue. So having those guys play together, coach together the last 3-4 years, and still and be the makers of the quote unquote Legion of Boom, we should have a better defense all around. But we still should have taken Devin White first overall.
Yeah, I think. I mean.
fourth overall. I believe that.
Yeah, it's hard to argue that one now because the guy arguably was the MVP of the game, and just that speed, you just can't replace that, man. It's remarkable, and he played really well, really well. All right, Joe, thanks, man. We'll talk to you real soon. Okay, we're gonna step aside, take a break, the final one of the show. When we come back, we're gonna wrap up our Super Bowl coverage with Sam and Ash. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl commercials. Which ones did you like? Which ones did you hate? And is the Super Bowl, is it the same spectacle it used to be? Of course, for football fans, it's always a big deal. But culturally, is it really, does it still have the impact it had maybe 5-6 years ago? We'll talk to Sam and Ash about that. This is Scott Colbranson on Silver and Black Today, only on Raider Nation Radio.
From Stabler to Plunkett and Allen to Jacobs, we've got your Raiders covered on Silver and Black Today. Here's your host, Scott Colbranson.
Welcome back. Monday, this Raider Nation Radio. It's your radio station. Come on, Raider Nation. I know, football season, 31 Sundays remaining till football is back. Yes, we'll have free agency. Yes, we'll have the draft. No combine. We'll have the draft. Who knows what the draft's going to be like? It's in Cleveland anyway. Do you really want it in person? I mean, come on. But here we are, Silver and Black Today. Scott Colbranson with you. As always, powered by our good friend Sam and Ash, the injury attorneys, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. And speaking of Sam and Ash, I go out now. We bring in our good friends, Sam and Ashley. Guys, how are you? How was your Super Bowl viewing yesterday?
Hey, good to be with you, Scott. Mine was good. I had a good time. The game was a murder, but the commercial surprised me because I expected them to be a lot better than they were. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I had some that I liked, but overall, and some of that, I kind of had the sense, Sam, that it was going to come down to that because of the year, because of COVID, because of the pandemic. You know, businesses aren't spending a lot of money, and a lot of the businesses that did do advertising, the Fords of the world, some of the Anheuser-Busch, they did things that were focused on healthcare workers, which is all great. You know, it's kind of the feel-good stuff and kind of retrospective for what had happened. But the humor and sort of, which was there in some spots, it just seems like it was gone. And maybe, you know, some of the spots where people were wearing masks, I thought that was ridiculous. I understand we were wearing masks right now, but some of that usage and stuff, I just thought it was pretty ridiculous because people, I think with these ads too, you want people to look towards something that they can either look forward to or laugh at or cry to, which is fine too. And instead they got, I thought, just kind of blah. I didn't see a lot of creativity.
Totally. And you know, it's funny because we just finished filming our own commercial, getting ready for a new campaign here in Southern Nevada. And so we went through the process and I think we came up with a beautiful ad. And one of the things, one of the decisions we had to make was, do we mask up or not? And we ended up filming very safely, but without masks, because my senses, I'm with you. I'm optimistic. I think it's darkest before the dawn. And, you know, right when we were filming, it was a tough time, but I see us coming out of it. And what I think is going to happen is that our commercial, when it comes out, people don't want to see a bunch of masks on. People want to escape from this grind that we're in, and the future is bright, and I hope maskless.
Yes. Sam and Ash, I guess we're talking about Super Bowl commercials. The one I did like, and maybe it's because of my age and when I grew up, I did like the Cadillac ad with the Edward Scissorhands. I don't know if you saw that one, but you know, Winona Ryder was in it, and of course Johnny Depp wasn't, but it was funny because the whole idea of this all-electric Cadillac was that at times it can drive itself. So I enjoyed that creativity, as well as a couple other ads. I liked the 5-9 ad, the Squarespace ad, which had Dolly Parton on it, where she rewrote the song. So some of that was good, but there's a question I have to ask you guys is the Super Bowl, I mean, the Super Bowl is still a big deal, don't get me wrong. And I know I'm biased because I cover the NFL, but it just seems like some of the cultural tentacles that it's had over the years, and maybe it's because we have so many diverse channels of communications and digital media and all this stuff, it just seems like it's receding a little bit.
Yeah, I would I'd totally agree. I think it's getting a little watered down, especially, I mean, we saw with Reddit, they did a 5-second ad because they know it'll get paused and screenshot and put all over social media. So I think what we're seeing is people aren't willing to invest the creativity and time, and they're using it more as a rally to bring people together. And I don't know if it's just this year because of COVID and everything that our country went through with protests on both sides of the political aisle. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. The commercials used to be all fun and just humor, and now they're getting to be very, community oriented.
Well, I think that's what people don't want to risk being too edgy. Mm-hmm. And so to me, this is kind of a symptom of this culture that we're in. I don't want to call it anything, but it's the current conditions are, is that if you take a risk and it doesn't work out, you're gonna get shot. People are gonna come after you. And there was a car company, an insurance company, which means, you know, I of course should be piling on, but I can't. An insurance company did an ad. Did you see this one about everybody's got an opinion and something about the guy whipping out his opinion? And it's a double entendre, if you will. And people were beside themselves online that it was, you know, that it was a, that it was, I don't know, glorifying sexual harassment in the workplace.
Yeah.
And it maybe went, okay, so, but it was funny and we've forgotten to laugh. And the process of making an advertisement is that it entertain us and keep us engaged, and that it's memorable, and that a day later after seeing it, we're still talking about it, right?
Right, right.
And so I think any ad, even ones you didn't like, if we're talking about it today, it was a successful ad.
Yeah.
And sometimes you got to be in advertising, you got to push the envelope a little bit. And I think the number of ads that were boring and unmemorable are a result of this time that we're in right now where nobody wants to take any risks.
Sam and Ash are our guests here. We're talking about the Super Bowl commercials from yesterday. Yeah, and I mean, there's some, you know, I've always liked, for me, maybe because I'm a sap a little bit, I've always liked the emotional stories or the comeback stories or, the underdog commercials where you have these big brands for altruistic reasons, you know, go to that instead of just showing their product. And I thought Toyota did a good job with the Jessica Long story, the swimmer, of course, who's basically a double amputee. I thought that was good, although my 11-year-old couldn't understand why a car company was doing a commercial about that, but he's 11. The other one, though, was like the one that I actually liked, and it was a terrible ad, but it was to me, this was cutting edge, was because they did it on purpose, which was the Oatly ad, the Wow No Cow ad, because when that ad was over, they have the founder in the middle of this wheat field playing a Casio keyboard with his oat milk, and he can't sing really well. But it was memorable because he was pushing the envelope, and then within 5 minutes after the ad ran, Oatly was selling t-shirts that said, boy, I hated that Oatly ad. So it was obviously part of their strategy to get it talked about because it was just so simplistic and bad. And in this current culture, that's what comes off as cutting edge.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. I definitely stopped everyone from talking that I was watching the game with. We all we were mid-conversation and immediately turned and were like, what is going on?
What was that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the Robin Hood ad I thought was interesting too, because the Robin Hood, of course, if you don't know all the investment stuff that happened with the GameStop stock and, of course, the AMC Theaters chain stock, and they ran it, and I thought it was a little bit tone deaf, their ad. Everybody can invest, and it's like, well, wait a minute, you're sued because you were selling your investors' shares without their permission. So it's weird, but that's the thing that I talk about, guys, with the Super Bowl and the cultural importance that it has because of what you highlighted, Sam and Ash, around the culture. Our culture right now, and of course, this I think was encapsulated in why you even get ads that are now divisive, and that was the Bruce Springsteen ad about the reunited states, right? The whole point of the ad was to say we should come to the middle, and he uses the little chapel in the middle of Kansas, which is the epicenter of the country geographically. And of course, it's done by somebody who's very outspoken against one side versus the other, and he's telling everybody to do this. So now the ad, while it's getting a lot of attention for Jeep, who placed it, and Bruce Springsteen, who was in it. It's actually done the opposite of what they wanted to do, although people are talking about it like we are right now.
Yeah, I just couldn't figure out why the cowboy was wearing an earring. Because I didn't recognize Springsteen at all. Yeah. I had somebody have to explain it to me midway through the ad. And then when it got to, one good thing about the ad is you wondered the whole time, like, who is this for? So at the end of the ad, it's, you know, Jeep and it's America Reunited. And why be political? I mean, why even touch it? I mean, Jeep could go so many different directions, but they went for that. And I don't know. I thought it was kind of disappointing.
Yeah, and you know what else too is there's now people claiming that it was too Christian because they used the chapel and there was so
you can't win. See, you can't win in this time.
You can't win. I think the only way, and you guys know this because if anybody's in Los Angeles or in Las Vegas and they see Sam and Ash television ads or even the stuff you guys do on radio, you guys are authentic. You yourselves. You talk about what you do. You talk about the impact your work has, and that's pretty much it. You don't rely on gimmicks. You don't rely on cutesy stuff or any massive amounts of hair gel or anything like that. You just kind of bring the message about what you do and how you help people. And I think that's what you have to do today. And I think that's why Super Bowl commercials are losing their impact a little bit, because the way things are today, people just want it straight. They want it real. They want to know that, okay, whatever you're selling, you're authentic and it's going to benefit me. It's going to help me do whatever I need to do. And so trying to do all of these other things and appealing to emotion, while sometimes they can work in some cases, it's just not the same anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't know. I still appreciate the just slapstick humor ads. That's what I'm in it for. I mean, there's some good, just funny ads that don't have to be political. They don't have to be, they're not really community. They're not trying to send any type of message. They're just there to make you laugh, get the idea of the brand across and move on.
Yeah, I think that's important too, is just the fun. I mean, I remember the Bud Light Seltzer lemonade ad with the lemons hitting people in the head and all that kind of stuff. It was, you know, that was just goofy.
Yeah.
You know, and you got the married couple under the table and the bride's crying because her wedding is ruined by all these falling lemons.
Yeah.
So I get that, but it you know, the game is there. The game is only part of the whole attraction. But I think that now, as consumers, we are consuming in so many different places, and we see commercials and videos and advertising digitally for all these brands so much that when we see something now, our expectations are so much higher too. And to me, I think that also ruins it, because just like with the football game, we thought this was going to be an amazingly close game and look what happened. So it's always about expectations and managing them, right?
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's crazy. But, you know, we move on and the football season is now over and we can focus on the off season. But as always, guys, we appreciate you coming on and it's fun to talk culture stuff. I'm amazed by it and how it's changing and it's rapidly sometimes declining and then it comes back up and then it goes different ways. But it's always fun to talk to people smarter than me about it. And that, of course, is Sam and Ash. Guys, thank you so much for being with us. We will talk to you next Monday.
Wonderful.
Look forward to it.
Thanks, Scott. Take care.
All right, guys. Take care. There you go. Bye. Sam and Ash. Don't forget, if you need help, call them anytime, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. For Chris Chapman, our producer and engineer and co-host as well as my man Q Myers, we thank you for being with us. We'll be back here same time tomorrow, 2 p.m., only on Raider Nation Radio. This has been Silver and Black Today. I'm Scott Gilbranson. We'll talk to you tomorrow.